A very good morning to you, my dear listener. Good morning, Namibia, and welcome to Eagle FM. And good morning wherever you find yourself this very Monday morning, the 19th of January 2025. So, good morning and welcome to this this episode of on Unpacking the Day. So how was your weekend? You know, how was your weekend? Let me first ask, how was your weekend? I just wanted to go through already. You know, how was your weekend? So hopefully you rested enough and you're ready for the week. It's always, you know, Monday is always very busy. At the beginning of the week, it's always busy, you know, because everybody is trying to fulfill all the duties that we're supposed to, taking the children to schools, and the traffic is quite heavy. So, yeah. And where are you listening us from? Are you listening us from, you know, we miss people from, you know, Katima, from Rundu, from Wavish Bay. Oh, people from Wavish Bay, we missed you. So what happened? The anonymous guys. So where are you? So how are you doing? I mean, we haven't even, you know, heard you from, you know, heard you this year. So where are you? So we're missing all the, and what is the other, you know, my old man in Katima. So what happened? Now I'm starting to think, are the people died or what? Please, if you want to know, if we want to know that you're still alive, okay? You are still alive in 2025. Make sure that today, you know, you come through and said, hey, I'm still alive, man. You know what I'm doing. You know the you that I'm talking about. Please do come through. Our regulars, eh? So please do come through. Just to know, I just want to know that you're fine and you're still alive. Even if you just called today and never called again, you know? So I just want to know that you guys are fine. So good morning and welcome. What time is about 6 minutes past the hour of eight. And welcome to Unpacking the Day. My name is Mike Oshoveli, and this is your daily dose of what is really happening, what is really going on in business, economic, and political news. So every weekday, we cut through the noise to make sense of the big stories, you know, trends and numbers making headlines. So we keep it clear and always curious, asking the question that matter and giving you a fresh take on what people are saying out there. So the views shared during our segment do not necessarily reflect those of Eagle FM. We are here to unpack what others are saying and spark a meaningful conversation so that you can be part of the bigger conversation. So this is your space. This is your platform to unpack the headlines and get to the heart of the story. So, and welcome. So if you're just joining us, this is Unpacking the Day, and you just right on time. You haven't missed something yet, rather than me greeting you and welcoming you. So good morning. It's good to have you. It's good. Thanks for joining us this morning. And it's a pleasure for us to be in your company as usually. This is what we enjoy doing. All right. Welcome. And you just come at the right time when we get into. So when we get into our first segment, where we, you know, where we journey back in time to remember the moments, whether they are big or small, that have actually shaped our continent. Today is the 19th. We're looking at that day. Today we are going to look at three very different days, all sharing the same date, the 19th, a day of secret mission, and also a day of remembrance, and a day of people power. So that's what we're looking at. And let's start in 1962. Let's start in 1962. On this day, a plane touched down in Mbeya, a town in Tanganyika. You know, that time is called actually Tanganyika, is the country we now know as Tanzania. Now, on board, There were two key anti-apartheid leaders. It was Nelson Mandela and Joe Matthews. So, well, they didn't go for holiday. It wasn't a holiday kind of trip. It was a secret mission. Okay? It was a secret mission. So, it's Mission Impossible. You know, if you have watched Mission Impossible, it's a Mission Impossible. So, they were on a dangerous international tour, trying to build support for the ANC, new armed struggle, you know, against the oppressive apartheid regime in South Africa. So they were there now to ask for help, to find allies and to gather the resources they needed to fight for freedom. So it was a crucial moment. It was a crucial moment, a time when the struggle was taken beyond South Africa's border to the rest of the continent and the world. So it was a very crucial moment. And now let's fast forward 37 years to 1999. Now, the scene is Buzuni, okay? A quiet village in Mpumalanga. So Mpumalanga means where the sun rises, right? Mpumalanga, where the sun rises. So that's it in South Africa. Now, on this day, South African's deputy president, at that time it was Mr. Thabo Mbeki, stood before a crowd to unveil a powerful memorial. Now, it was a tribute to a fallen friend and a hero of the region. Guess who? Samora Machel. So, the president of Mozambique, President Machel, had tragically died in a plane crash right there in Buzini back in 1986. Now, this memorial, it wasn't just a memorial for one man, you know. It was more like a symbol of the deep bond of solidarity between the liberation movements of Southern Africa. So it was a promise not to never forget the sacrifice made for freedom across our borders. So, but our history is also being written right now. And that brings us to the more recent past, to 2015. Now, on this day, the street of Kinshasa, the capital of Democratic Republic of Congo, erupted, you know? So thousands of people took to the street in a massive protest. Why? Because their government had proposed a new law, and a law that many believe was just a trick to allow President Joseph Kabila to hold on to power for longer. Now, the people said, that's not gonna happen, not on our watch. So they marched, they chanted, and they demanded their democracy to be respected. So the government response, you know, as the African government always do. So it was brutal. Security forces used violence and dozens of people were actually killed. So, but the people's voice was heard, the pressure worked, and the government was forced to withdraw the controversial law. So, and that is your journey through history for today's On This Day in Africa. So join us again tomorrow. You know, again, for another segment of this day in Africa. So, good morning and welcome. And thanks for joining us at this point in time. Our time is about 13 minutes past the hour of 8. We are coming live to you. We are coming to you live from the Ondangwa studio. And I'm Michael Chavetti. I will be with you until 10 o'clock. Well, stay tuned, and we're now looking at, you know, our favorite segment of the thought for the day. What is our thought for the day today, January the 19th, the Monday, January the 19th? So, he who has no pond must not breed crocodiles. If you don't have a pond, don't breed crocodiles. That's a proverb. So, the proverb means that you should not create problems or take on a burden you cannot actually manage or do not have the resource to deal with. All right? So if you look at its imagery, is someone without a pond has no environment to support crocodiles. So trying now to breed them would lead to trouble or irresponsibility. So how it is commonly interpreted is to be mindful of limits, know your situation, and don't extend yourself with commitment or risk beyond your control. We come back.
When you choose UNAM,
you get credible accreditations.
You get internationally recognized qualifications.
You get a university with a growing reputation.
When you choose UNAM,
you get a head start on local jobs.
You become connected in a growing Namibia.
You stay in the best country in the world.
Because you already know, you love it here.
Open your mind to UNAM.
And UNAM will open the world to you.
UNAM is your university, Namibia.
Because the U in UNAM is you.
So yeah, we are at the very beginning of the year. The U in UNAM should... You should be able to see you yourself in UNAM, all right? So, yeah, we were looking at our thought for the day today. And, he who has no pond must not breed crocodiles. So that's the Proverbs. And how it is commonly interpreted is to be mindful of limits. Be mindful of limits. Know your situation and don't overextend yourself with commitments or risk beyond your control. So this proverb is often used now to advise caution and practical judgment before launching ventures or action that may have a serious consequences you aren't prepared to handle. So whatever decision or choices that you're making today, make sure that, you know, they don't lead to, you know, they're not beyond your control. So they're not beyond your control. So that's our thought for the day. He who has no pond, must not breed crocodiles. All right. So that's the word, that's our thought for the day this morning. So welcome. And looking at what we will be discussing today, looking at what we have for you this morning, it's actually quite very interesting. So what we're looking at is what making headlines today in our newspaper, in our e-newspaper, The Villager. So, and make sure that you describe, make sure that you subscribe. You're missing out on some of these very, very, very important news. So if you're looking for the latest, business, whether either it's business or finance or economic news or political news, social news, what you need to do is get yourself a copy, a free copy for that matter. Get a free copy of The Villager by simply sending a WhatsApp message with your name and email to 081-200-4144, and make sure that you save that number. So The Villager, so if you're just joining us today and you haven't known this, The Villager is published every day. It's published every Monday, Wednesday and Friday. So let me just repeat myself again. It's published every Monday, Wednesday and Friday. I know most of you were getting excited. You thought maybe it's a new plan for the new year. No. It's still every Monday, Wednesday and Friday with the quality that it comes with it. So, all right, that's, make sure now that you subscribe so to be able to read for yourself the stories that sometime we bring to you on this program that we unpack. And what we're going to unpack, you know, this morning from that, our front page, the front page of the of the villager is actually we're going to look at Kavango's West communal land is being fenced off and the law is moving very, 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 very slow. So that's what we're going to unpack. And possibly this is not just a problem in Kavango. The issues, we're going to look at the issues that highlight in the articles and analyze that a little bit. And also, do you remember, it was Friday I was talking about, you know, I was talking about the what happened to the, what happened to the construction of stadiums, of stadium that actually budgeted in our budget, about how many? Every constituency is going to having a stadium. And I was asking that Friday. So the president has decided to shift that responsibility, you know, to fast track the construction of sport facilities. We're going to look at that as well. So stay tuned and unpack that with me. So make sure that you unpack all this with me. It's coming up in a second.
Omutiha with the Kirokaguna, E. Matina, Omjo. Chicago Shafasa Nana, Longeshifa, Yai, Shuike Moshiwana, E. Moyao, or Tango Gotisamwene, Anagashifa, Yanamibia, Ombitom Banawa, Oronjika, Seisanina, Omaguro, Nidanitoma, Yue, Yongeshifa, Yokupira, Mo Ikelefem Media House, Gue 20 Mimeha, Ukakombanga Nina. Kara omkwashi pareki wimwepo yomo programa letu. Moambo, dengera selma, onarahita tuimwe. Datu ndatu, heari hamano tano, oniari. Ikele FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Yes, definitely you are in the company of the eye. That's Eagle FM. So very good morning to you and welcome. Welcome to Unpacking the Day. So one of the headline in today's edition of The Villager is, and it's the story by Anaclet Haikera, it's about the illegal fencing of communal land in Kavango West is not stopping. It is actually not stopping and it is growing and it has become, this is something that we really need, that really national conversation, seriously. Not only here on Eagle FM and at a different level as well, at some other level. It need to go to, if there are lawmakers that are listening to me, please, that need to be taken some far away because this has been taken years. This issue of especially in Kavango West, that has been an issue for years. So now there has been an investigation and while there is an investigation and hearings that are taking place, that are happening, the fencing is still actually spreading. So the fencing, is still spreading according to the article. So yeah. Now, communal land, you know, communal land meant to be shared. Okay. It's meant to be shared. It is a land for grazing. It is for, you know, for collecting. This is where some people, especially in an area like Kavango, it's where you collect your wild food. Eh? And it's for movement of animals, you know, for survival. Let's just put it that way. It's for survival. But illegal fencing turns shared now. Now, illegal fencing, it turns this shared land into a private land. Piece by piece. And once that fence is up, it changes everything. Once that fence is up, it honestly changes everything. So we see that. And personally, I also have an experience of that. Okay? So it just changes everything. So what? Let's look at some of the key facts. What is the article saying? I'm going to look at some 7 points that has been reported here that we can be able to look at. Okay? So let's look at 9. Okay? 9 points that we can really focus on, maybe on our analysis, or just for you to understand what are the key issues in this story. So now, the one thing is that the scale is massive. What I mean is that the scale of this land fencing, it's really massive. The Kavango West Communal Land Board says it's over 21,534.91 hectares. 21,000 hectares of a communal land have already been affected by illegal fencing in the region. Over 21,000 hectares. That amount of land is not a small village problem, really. That amount of land is not a small problem. It's not a small village problem. That is a regional land governance crisis. You know? So that is the issue maybe that we need to look at. Now, the other things that the article report, I'm looking at 7, 8, 9 aspect, is also the cases now are piling up. And the article said it likely to pass 60. So authorities are warning that confirmed cases are expected to go above 60 because more investigation are still actually underway. So cases, you know, in cases are piling up. Okay, that's one area. The other thing is also when now they say in the article when they say dealt with, it does not really mean removed. Okay? The board report 44 illegal fences were officially dealt with. Okay? So in the article, so dealt with. But in the reporting period, so when it's mentioned that it's dealt with during the time we're reporting this, but it also explained that this number reflects administrative and legal steps like investigation, hearing, orders, appeal. It doesn't really mean physical removal. So when they said that 44 illegal fences were officially dealt with, it means that, you know, there has been investigation made, there has been hearing probably done, there has been orders and, you know, and appeals, but not physical removal. You understand? So just to understand that aspect as well. So now, this is what I call this. What the article also report is that, and this is what I would call this. This is not depressing. Yeah, you can say depressing. So only one fence was actually removed after all that process. After all that process, only one fence was actually removed. So that is the part that actually should make you think, what is going on here? What is going on here? After all the investigation, the hearing and the orders, the physical reality on the ground is that only one fence came down. Only one. In Portuguese, in. In German, how do you say it? What is it? Okay. I'm forgetting my German. Gosh. So the report, the articles also report appeals are slowing everything down. So several fence owners now, the one who put up fence, have appealed to tribunal. So, and while those appeals are now pending, removal are delayed. So now you can't be able to you can't take away the you can't remove the fence because they are pending. The appeals are pending. So in practice, that means fences remain standing while the legal wills actually turn. Eh? So stay tuned. We're going to continue with our story.
Great news. Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just $36 Namibian a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Yes, a very good morning to you. And I'm an Imba favorite. I'm an Imba fan. You know, I'm a really an Imba fan because I constantly use. I used even this Saturday over the weekend. So I have used Imba over the weekend. I can tell you that. It's a really an app that you should have. Because you might find yourself in some situations. It doesn't matter whether you're a church goers or not. You will find yourself in situations. Sometimes you go to funerals, you go to weddings, you go to... You don't want to look out of place. Eh? And you look cool, actually. You know, you look cool having Imba because, you know, wherever you find yourself, it doesn't matter whether you are in the south, whether you are in, you know, in the other side of Katima Mulilo or Zambezi regions, or whether you are now at the coast. It doesn't matter what language, whether it's Afrikaans, Silozi, you know, Herero, Kavango. Hey, they're all there. All right. And if you're a church, and you don't have your hymnal there, think again, man. You gotta think again. Think again. You're missing out. You're really missing out. Make sure that you contact our people, you know, our office, to make sure that you have your hymnal also in the Imba. I can tell you, it's a very, very, very good app to have on your phone. Okay? And come back and tell me that, Mike, yeah, you saved me. All right. So, yeah. So we're looking at the report that make headlines on our article that makes actually headlines in our today's edition of The Villager. And we're just looking at some of the, you know, it's about legal fencings that actually, you know, keep spreading in the Kavango West. We're just highlighting few points that are reported in the article. So, and I just mentioned that, you know, the other aspect, the other issue is that appealings are slowing everything down. You know, the removal of the fences, it's also being slowed by the appealing, because the fence owners have appealed to tribunal. They appealed to tribunal, and while those appeals are pending, you know, removals are delayed. In practice, that means fence actually remain standing while the legal's still going on. So there are also issue of logistic and capacity. So those and they're openly discussed. They are openly described as weak. This whole logistic and capacity is openly described as weak. That means the board says enforcement is constrained by things like inadequate funding. So the reasons why enforcement is not really happening, because there are laws. that prohibit this. And the reasons why these laws are not being kept, it's because, you know, inadequate funding, a lack of 4x4 apparently vehicle to reach remote areas, you know, boundary disputes between the traditional authorities, and limited understanding of the law, okay? So limited understanding of the law among the stakeholders. So that also, you know, become an issue. So, yeah, and we're going to look at that as well. So, yeah, the other, you know, the also article report that the board spent just under $500,000 on meetings and related activities. Now, it reports spending about the board reports spending about $481,579. Do you want me to mention the cents as well? You know? So, and that amount is on 5 board meetings. So now, this now includes accommodation, allowance, catering, monitoring, investigation, all the things, some of the things that we have mentioned earlier. So that's the amount they have spent. And the other report, the other aspect, the other area, the article report is the community are really now sounding the alarm. Okay? They are resident in places like, in villages like Mbungu, Nankundu, Kurenkuru, are saying illegal fencing is destroying livelihood. They are destroying our livelihood. They are reducing our grazing. They are causing conflict with animal across into fences areas. So they also say slow action. The slow action of authority, of the government, makes people actually feel the law is not working for ordinary villagers. So, and the last issue, I think issue that relevant from the report is that there's a mess, there's a policy mess, you know? So kind of deeper policy mess where land rights not registered. And there is also a moratorium blocking lease application. So some customary land rights are still not registered, and that's actually leaving people insecure, do not know what to do. And there's also a mention of leasehold, a leasehold application on land outside designated agricultural area being stuck because a ministerial moratorium. So that in itself adds a pressure, adds frustration, and also competition, definitely competition. Yeah. So now those are some of the issues. Those are what the article has reported. Now let's unpack this. Okay, why is this escalating, even with the process happening? So we hear from the articles that there's a process happening, but why is this actually escalating? Eh? Who come? Eh? Varum? Why is it happening? So, and I think, seriously, and I'm inviting you, this is where as Namibian really need an honest conversation, okay? An honest conversation. Because what we are seeing, we're seeing actually a gap between the law on paper and life on the ground. That's what we're seeing. There's a gap there between the law on paper. There are laws that actually prevent people from fencing of things. There is a law. You can see that there's a gap between the law on that we have, that's on paper, and the life on the ground. Completely, there is that gap. So, a fence is not, when we're talking about a fence is not just wire and poles, okay? It is, but it's not just that when we're talking about in a communal setting. When we're talking about that in a communal setting, a fence is power. Yeah? Seriously, a fence is power. Because if a community sees fence after fence going on or going up, while removal barely happens, you know, people start actually drawing conclusions. Eh? When now there's a fence, you can't go in there. That's why I tell you, the fence is power. And you don't know how it comes, who it belongs to, and there are a lot of questions. And, as I said, people can draw conclusions. When now this, and especially in that area, it has been going on for years. For years. People now can start drawing their conclusion. Either they think that the system is weak, that the system is weak, or that the system is captured. So those who are supposed actually to enforce the law, they might be captured from the traditional authority, from the land, from the board, they could be captured, or from some people from wherever. The system could be captured. Or that the system only moves when the fence owners is not connected. Some of those, the one probably that have actually removed, it could be that he's not well connected. So, as I said, people start drawing their conclusions. You can draw your own conclusion. Now, thinking of how long this has taken to be really sorted out. And it's against the law. That's why we said illegal fencing. It is against the law. I mean, when I said the system is weak or it could be captured, I'm not saying that's what is happening. I'm saying people can draw conclusions. I'm saying that is what people start believing when they watch illegal fences stand for years. How many times, how many years we have talked about this? And especially that part of the region. Especially that part of the region. Especially Kabango West. So, illegal fencing stands for years. Then it tells you someone, somewhere, you know, they're captured. They're captured. Because if it were not the case, you know, proceeding could have been really fast enough, even if you know there's this and there's a dangerous part too. There's some, I mean, we know there has been conflict over the years. So why, once people believe the system is unfair, what do you expect? You get the most dangerous outcome. Communities start thinking, you know, they may start actually thinking of taking matters into their own hands, as it happened before. It did happen before. There has been conflict in those areas. So you don't want that to happen again. And that's how local dispute becomes regional instability. That's how it happens. Something that could have been prevented until it grew to something that become really, terrible. Where even sometimes maybe human lives comes into it. That's how, when you hear in some other countries, that's how local dispute become regional instability. Especially you hear this from Nigeria. And it's not only Nigeria, I'm just mentioning Nigeria. So where dispute in terms of, you know, grazing areas and all that, you know, becomes really regional instability, where people started to kill each other. So sometimes we are too complacent. Namibia, we are too very complacent. You know, we believe too much into our peace, which is good, but it is fragile. It is very, 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 very fragile. When communities start thinking of this, when they feel, they believe that the system is unfair, there will be time, you know, that, you know, I'm just cautioning not looking at what other people, what other countries and other regions are experiencing. So, yeah. But let's look at it in a bigger context. Let's look at it in the Namibian context. Now, when we talk about communal land is not some kind of empty land that you just come from there and grab. Eh? It's not just an empty land. Well, it may look empty. It may look empty, but communal land is where many households survive. Eh? This is where many households actually survive. They survive there through life in livestock grazing. Yeah, this is area where people actually livestock grazing. This is where they you know, crop, especially in sometimes in that area, cropping fields and gardens. Eh? So, and access to water points. Now, when you put up points, when you put up fence, long fences like 21, we're talking about over 21,000 hectares. So, and sometimes, you know, the fences follow each other. Now, people used to pass through, they used to follow a certain route to get to the water point. Now they don't have access anymore to that water point. And sometimes it might be that the water point now, it is actually inside of someone's fence. Eh? And that's what happened. It does, that's what is happening. So some shared natural resources has been fenced off. Eh? It has become individual property now. So, and when fences go up illegally, it does three things, okay? It does three things immediately. When it just that fence goes up there, I mean, we, most of us have experienced that in our own areas. When that fence goes up there, it does three things. First, it shrinks grazing, it really shrinks grazing lands. People used to have enough land to graze. People in those villages, they used to use this land. The reason why it's left, you know, open, it's for people use it to graze. Eh? And that directly hits now. When now, you know, the grazing land shrinks, you know, it becomes now, you know, that affect the cattle owners in the village. Because they don't know, they have no place where they now, you know, graze their animal. Less grazing means, you know, cattle becomes don't have enough area where they can graze, where they have enough grass to eat. It becomes, cattle become weaker, cattle become, you know, thinner, and you may experience high losses. You may experience high losses. And what does that do? It then affect our, definitely have a direct effect to our household. That contribute now making people poor, that making the village poor, household poor, due to individuals who is actually grabbing lands, who actually fencing illegally. So the other thing, what happened immediately is also it fueled dispute. So because animal wanders, you know, when it's a time when you're not looking after the animals, the animal wanders. Then the conflict starts. They go, you know, you only go and get them in the evening or somewhere, but they wanders. Now they go to even places where, because that's where they used to graze. Yeah? So in that, then the conflict starts. Not people, not just because people love fighting, because people are now being squeezed. Eh? They are being squeezed. So with their animals, with the number of the animals that they used to have now, they are being squeezed in a very tiny area where they cannot now, their animal cannot be able to graze freely anymore. So, and the other thing that happened immediately, it blocks the next generation. In the article, it's also talking about that the youth, the article is concerned about poverty and youth access. So what it means also, it actually blocked the next generation. This is actually, you block the next generation. If young people can't access land for farming or livestock, unemployment becomes permanent. And that's what we see. It's logical. It becomes unpermanent, then poverty deepens in that area. So what do you expect? Then migration increases. The issues that we're complaining in urban area, we're creating them. Then migration increases. Then you have now the social tensions between all these, between the villages, between the different traditional authorities. And all these dynamics are consistent with the article's concern about poverty and youth access. So, yeah, it's something, as I said, this is a national conversation. It should be a national conversation. And if you're a lawmaker listening, you know, we are at the beginning. When you start, this is an issue that needs to be solved. There are progress, there are process now, but, you know, let's talk about the slow removal problem. The slow removal problem is the legal process being used as a shield. Is it being used as a shield? Now, let's put it sharply, okay? Now, what I mean is that if legal offenses stay up while appeals drag on, okay? Think. If it stays up while the appeals drag on, then what stops someone actually from doing this? You put up the fence, you know, and then you, when people now complain to say, yeah, you have to remove your, and then you appeal. And then appeal, what does it? Now we have here, there's no money, there's no funds, there's no whatever, you know. So what happened? That drags on. So first, fence first, argue later, delay forever. It's a pattern. Put up, you know, it's like, you know, they know, put up the fence, man, you know, and then people argue later, and then, you know, the delays go on. We know this, it takes years. It taken many, many years. I would have even used the F word here. It taken many years. Don't you see this is something really, really need to be taken? Is it because, you know, it depends who is benefiting anyway. It depends who is benefiting. So here's the question for you. Here's the question for a democratic Namibia. Okay? This is a question for you, for a democratic Namibia. Is it the appeal process, you know, protecting rights or protecting wrongdoing? Because, well, the due process matters. Due process matters. Yes, it does matter. But communal survival also matters. It also matters. So if the practical outcome is that illegal offenses remain, then the process is failing the very people it meant to protect. It completely does. It's failing to protect the very people it meant actually to protect. So now, there's also tension. There's also traditional tension, traditional authority tension. Who is really in charge of the ground? You know, the article points out to unresolved boundary dispute between traditional authority as part of the, you know, as part of the enforcement challenge. As part of it, there's also dispute. So, which is actually a perfect, you know, recipe of illegal fencing. So it's an area that actually being, you know, the boundaries is not resolved. So when you put up the legal fence, who do you go to? Who comes to you? Because the other traditional authorities haven't got your authority over the area. The other haven't got ever the authority over the area. So it's actually unresolved boundary disputes. And where now people can just come in and actually put their fence. Put their fence illegally. Do you understand? This is a perfect, you know, opportunity. And the fence owners are preying on that. Do you understand? And this matter, it is actually matter because that's tension. It matters because, you know, in a communal areas, authority is not only the state. The authority is not only the state. It's also the customary leadership. Yeah? Because the legitimacy, the local legitimacy, the community trust, it's within these leaders. It's within these leaders when they have now to decide to say, look, we are being squeezed, our right has been violated. It would depend. It has to be with. They have to match along. They have to match together with the leaders, with the authority, and if they are not doing that, definitely then the people have no chance. The people have no chance. So when there are boundary dispute, and when customary rights are not registered, as the article says, you have a perfect storm. You really have a perfect storm. Unclear borders, you know. So contested authority, you know. So you now have vulnerable residents who don't know, you know, who to go to. And then you have opportunists who know how to exploit the confusion. These are the opportunists who actually knows how to exploit those confusion. And it's very, very, very clear. So these are people who are exploiting that confusion. So if the customary rights are not registered, definitely that's a perfect. You have created a perfect storm. Perfect storm. And then the article, there was this whole question of money question. Now, are we funding enforcement or funding administration? So because the board reported spending about nearly 481,000, okay? They reported spending about 481,579.06, you know? That's what they have spent on 5 meetings, okay? That's quite a half a million. On 5 meetings. Well, and related costs, definitely. So, now, I want to be careful here, okay? I want to be careful here because the meeting are not automatically a waste, all right? So meeting are not automatically a waste because governance requires, you know, coordination, monitoring, and investigation, all right? Now, but the public will ask a simple question, and I'm stand with the public. So they would ask a simple question. If a half a million dollar goes to meetings and only one fence comes down, after all those meetings, only one fence comes down, what is exactly are we paying for? Eh? What are we paying for? That's what comes to my mind. I mean, when I read this and say, oh, they spend the input, it doesn't reflect the output. Half a million or 5 meeting and it's only one fence comes down? Come on. What is exactly we are paying? What are we paying for? What are we paying for? It's just for your own accommodation and per diem and, I mean, you know, and what? We with something that I mentioned earlier on. So, and the result? Just one fence come down. That is the output. The input doesn't reflect the output, you know. And to make it even sharper, you know, is the state investing now? Is the state actually investing in, are they investing in capacity in terms of vehicles, a removal team, now a building, now a team that can be able to remove all these things and legal muscles? Because now the process is so slow, maybe we don't have enough lawyers or whatever the case may be. Or are we mainly investing in paperwork? Eh? In producing minutes that we actually have met, you know, on this day, and this is what comes out. Where is the investing goes in? Where does it goes? It should be going into, you know, in the capacity to be able to, you know, to produce results. So now, when you come, I will allow you now to come through, you know, have your comment, have your reaction to this story. The story is found in today's edition. It's the headline. It's our front page, front page headlines. So make sure that you subscribe to The Villager and be able to get your free copy of The Villager every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So now, there are a few things that I want us to discuss, or that I want you really to consider, any of these questions, okay? So, you know, call in, maybe you want to argue or disagree, whatever the case may be, in terms of some of the things that I have spoken. So let's open it up, okay? Because this is not just a Kavango West issue. Okay? This is not just Kavango West issue. It is the Namibian issue, all right? Now, if a communal land is for everyone, why is it so easy for one person just to fence it off? Why is it easy, really, for a person to fence it off? No, I need to. How does it happen? What does that say? You know, I'm trying to get that, to fathom that in my head. How does that say about our reinforcement, our enforcement, our local power structure? Eh? What does that say? What does that say about those power structures? Because you can't just come from there, one person come from there to fence it off. Really? Eh? How? So that's one thing. Tell me about it. Talk to me. Tell me about that. Now, should an illegal... The second one is, should an illegal fence stay standing while... Because I'm starting to think, this person put up something illegal. Now that stays, remain, then they appeal. So, but then the illegal fence stays standing while the appeal is going on. So my question is, should actually a legal fence stay standing while the appeals continue? Or should it come down first, get it off first, and then court fight continues after? Why would it, you put it up legally, it goes, let's get it off, and then fight when it's gone. Eh? That's my point. You may have a different understanding. The person put it illegally. So should it stay standing while the appeal continue? And that's going to take years and years. Now, this is block our way to the water point. So maybe for 2, 3, 4, 5 years, eh? Or 6, 7, 8 years, sometime 10 to 20 years. We know the experience in that area. Take it off. Eh? While now the court fighting continues. So which approach protects the community better? I'm asking now you, which approach protect the community better? So even if you, now this is also as a lawmaker, as a law enforcement, whoever you are, which approach would protect the community better? Because the community is suffering. Now, and when number three, now my question number three is, when community now report illegal offenses and nothing changes for years, what do we expect them to stay calm forever? That's my question. Or are we quietly creating a condition of, how do they call that, vigilantism? So it has been years, when now a community report these legal fences, and it has nothing happened so far. Like what we're talking, the process started, the only one that comes down. Nothing changes for many years. So do we expect now them to stay just calm forever? Do we just expect that they will just remain calm? That's how we create, you know, condition of conflict. That's how we create, quietly creating condition of conflict. So think about it. Think about it. And I have 5 questions. No, let me have 6. Okay. So I have, these are the questions just to allow us, when you come through, maybe, you know, touch on one. I just want us, I'm putting up there for us to think broadly, you know. Now, there's also another one about penalties. Are the penalties strong enough? You know, and I'm relating this to what I probably talked about on Friday when it comes to, last week, when it comes to penalty, bait catch, when it comes to fishing, the bait catch. So the Ministry of Fisheries, it's putting up a new law that really makes sure that the penalties are really severe, so that it deter, you know, the perpetrator to stop. You understand? So, but previously the penalties were peanut, and they will actually catch the bait catch. You know, they continue to do that because they know the amount they will pay. It's peanuts. It's peanuts compared to the profit they will make from the bait catch. So are the penalties strong enough? It's the same here, because if the cost of being illegal is so low, then illegal fencing becomes a business strategy. Yeah, go and put it up, but you're only going to pay a couple of thousand and the place is yours. I mean, those who have money wouldn't find this as an issue. I mean, if you're going to be asked if the penalty is about a couple of thousand, you know, or 100,000, for people who have money, that's nothing. You just put it up illegal, pay the penalties, and then you have your place. And what happened to the community? That money, it doesn't go even to the community. You understand? So, are the penalties really strong enough? I doubt that. I doubt that. If the cost of being illegal is low, I believe this become a strategy. It become a business strategy. Simply as that. So what do you think? My other question is, what role should traditional authority really play in stopping this? They don't seem to. They don't seem to have actually have a role. They don't seem to have a role. And what happened when the traditional authority structures themselves maybe are part of the dispute environment? So remember what I said. When things like clicks happen, people start to wonder and start to think. Yeah? So that's what these are questions that we have. So how do you now fairly, if that's the case, fairly without disrespecting culture, you know, but also withholding, allowing abuses. Eh? And my final questions is, these are questions just for you to really to allow you to think and look at the situation more broadly. So if youth, it's about the youth. It's also talking about the youth. So if the youth cannot access land, what future are we building in the Kavango regions, especially in Kavango West? What future? And how does that connect national? How does that connect to the national unemployment and poverty? It has a huge, huge connection. So you're most welcome to come through now, and I'm giving you those kind of questions just to look at this situation, not just focus on the story in the article itself, but looking at this issue more broadly and see what is happening. So our telephone number now, you can come through, is 08333-66091, 08333-66091. So you're most welcome to come through and have your say, have your, you know, your reaction, and also your your, yeah, if you disagree. Or now, the board, so there were some recommendation, but you know, the board, now before we look at that, no, now I want you to come through and really look at, and think how, what do you think? Maybe you're coming from this, you are also from one of these regions, or this is happening in your area. So if you, you know, which constituency are you calling from? Maybe tell us what is happening in your constituency. Have you seen illegal fencing in your area? And what should happen first? And this is what I want. What should happen first also? Removal, fine, arrest, or mediation? Yeah? Which should happen first? Remove it first, or fines first, or arrest, or what? Or mediate, or what do you want it to happen first? So, yeah, please do come through. Our telephone number, 08-333-66-091. 08-333-66-091. All right.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Omutiha, utekirwa kaguna, imatina, omjo. Chikao shafata nana, longeshifa, ya, ishiwike moshiwana. Iye moyao, ota ingongotisa mwene. Anageshifa, ya Namibia, ombito ombwa na wa oronjika. Seitha nina omayakuro nirandi thoma yoe, yongeshifa yoe okupitira mo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende tuimemeha uka kombanga nina. Kara omkwashipareki uimepo yomo programa detu. Moambo, dengira selma, konara heta tuimu. Datundatu, heari hamano tano, oniaji. Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional, and church events. And basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram.
A very good morning to you and welcome back. Welcome back. Our time is about 12 minutes past the hour of 9. And this is Unpacking the Day, and we are here. We will be unpacking until the hour of 10 o'clock. So when we'll be joined, for now, we'll be joined by, when we'll be joined by Naluvanda, who is coming up with Kuthamosha around 10 o'clock. So, and it's going to continue. It's coming. The Kuthamosha will be coming to you from this side of the world, from the Ondamo studio. So make sure that you stay tuned for that program as well. All right. So, yeah, we're talking about illegal fencing in the Kavango West that is actually continued to spread. And the slow process of addressing this issue. So, yeah, that's the problem. And we have the board call for bigger budget so to be able maybe to handle some of the they're talking about 4x4. They cannot be able to go to certain area in remote areas, they, you know, legal issues and all that. Yeah, bigger budget probably to be able to address some of the issues that has been, you know, mentioned. Stronger awareness program. People don't know their right. All right? People don't know their right. I think that needs to be some kind of education on lease and rental obligation. You know, they also mentioned that. But the other thing is that it's also something that we try to do here. We try to open, to sensitize, conscientize. So trying to conscientize in terms of, like, you know, conscientize is when you raise that kind of awareness. This is the situation that I'm finding myself in. All right, I must now start looking for information. I must now start doing something. That's conscientize, you know. So conscientize or something. Okay, so yeah, that's what I try to do, you know. So they also call for improved institutional capacity. Probably they feel that regionally they don't have the capacity to maybe to deal at the speed and the capacity and the power and the authority at level where this actually deserves to. So as also call for a stronger enforcement mechanism. Yeah, so because seriously, I don't know whether there must be also some, there's also a lack of political will. Maybe I would add that they call for some political will from the region as well. You know, if the political will from the region is not strong, so definitely, you know, nothing really moves. Nothing moves. Eh? So, and all these are reasonable. All these call for by the board are reasonable. But as the public, we must push beyond recommendation. We must push beyond this recommendation. We must ask for, really, we must ask for timelines. When is actually this going to end? We need to know. We must ask for timeline. When is this going to end? We must ask for target. How many that going to be of illegal that will be removed? Target. Eh? Measurable result. How, when, you know, be able to see that this is really happening. So we need to do that. As a public, we must ask those kind of stuff. Because now this whole thing, we are investing cannot be a permanent answer. Yeah? For how many years we are investing. That cannot be the permanent answer while the livelihood of people are actually collapsing. That can't be a permanent answer. So, and I don't understand even the, as a political world that I was talking about, when a governor comes on, those are issues, those are pertinent issues that are happening in the region. It should be on top of the agenda. Yeah? And here we are, every year, for how many years? Yeah? So, yeah, just to bring this to an end, so the illegal fencing is not just about land, okay? It's not just about land. It is about who belongs, who eats, who owns the future, and whether the law is really for everyone. That's what is this all about. Yeah? So Kavango, the Kavango West is sending Namibian a warning signal. That's actually a warning signal. It's sending us a warning signal. And if we ignore it, the fence line will become a faulty line. A fault line. You know, seriously. So, yeah. That's for this segment on unpacking the day. So what do you take? What is your take? You're still most welcome to come through and have your say on that on this matter. So 08-333-66-091. 08-08-333-66-091.
no matter where you are. If you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Omutiha, we take it kaguna, I matina omjo. Chikao shafata na 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 longe shifa ya ishiwike moshiwana. Iye moyao, ota ingongo tisa mwene. Anage shifa ya Namibia, ombito ombwa na wa oronjika. Zeitha nina omayakuro nirandito mwa yoe, yonge shifa yoe kupitiramo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende timemeha uu kakombanga nina. Kara omkwashi pareki uimepo yomo programa betu. Moambo, dengera selma, konara hita tuimu. Datu ndatu, heari hamano tano, oniyaji. Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima.
Hello? Good morning.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, Mike. Good morning, Mr. Oshaveli. How are you?
I'm fine, man. Yourself?
We thank God for the Monday again. It's a new day. It's another day. You see, I don't know why I deleted the old one.
Yeah.
I installed the new one, but I'm still not connected.
You're still not?
Connected. I'm not hearing you. Maybe the technology, because I always do it. See, I deleted that one. I installed a new one, the new app.
Yeah. Yeah, no, for today, for some reasons, I even find mine was not actually working this morning. So,
maybe could be on my Wangajo.
Yeah, could be, yeah. So, so yeah, but our technical people were something that I also reported earlier on. They are working on it. Yeah, I think that has been.
No, don't worry. Let's not bother them. Let's not burden them. Yeah. You know, they are always sacrificing like the way you are doing. So, otherwise, how is the Monday?
So Monday so far so good. As I always said, it's a new year. We are at the beginning, so it's an opportunity to look at how we change things for our country.
Obviously, I think the change that we really need to have, without talking just general behavioral change, because that's your area.
Yeah,
I'm just saying it because I discovered that behavioral change should be really focused.
Yeah, you're right.
So that we can really, even our attitudes, our behaviors, the way we look at things. Now.
No, that's a very, very, very important point you're making, because many people, it's easy. Look, it's like this, when we had a president really very, very upbeat, very want things done, and this is something I'm going to talk even in the what, in the construction of sport facility, the another story that I'm going to look at, where now the president have decided to shift the responsibility to fast track the construction of sport facility, which has been budgeted already, the money is available, but sometimes people just get used to what they are, what they have been, you know, and no matter how much now the push are, they just within their own zone, and they don't change. Some of them, they don't change, you know? And that's what behavior change is a very, very, very strong thing to do. Yeah.
Yes. Thank you very much, Mike, for narrating on that one. Because I've read it in the newspaper where the president has given them the authority and the mandate.
Yeah.
Whether they like it or not, maybe it's up to us, our community, to take ourselves to account and see, are these people fulfilling the directive? Many at times, people ignore those kind of things.
Exactly.
If, And if it is the government who are given that power, and there are also structures that are already established there within their community, their constituency, because we are talking about development that comes, it's a bottom-up approach to development. So there's nothing that they cannot, because we know already that schools are crowded, chairs need to be done. Even when you establish those sport facilities that you are talking about, it's a community kind of a learning center that you have to establish. And this learning center should also look at the technical subjects. I was just talking to one of my cowboy. So we say you want to do mechanical engineering. I say you cannot just be looking after the land here. Kuchanga na vata iko tuli metuala ite ku futo te ku landerofewa.
Yeah.
So those are some of the things. The sports facility, I'm very, very grateful for the political leadership. The direction is clear and the vision is up to us to change our behavior as to how do we promote this vision.
Yeah.
Or are we going to just see the vision is given there, the mandate is given? I know the all the regions actually, because even the Ophelia, Ipinge, Honorable there, and many. So I don't know, because these sports facilities, we are going also to put some kind of village, kind of camp, when people are coming to play soccer here. Like Senegal, I was supporting Senegal, thank God. But I don't know how I slept. I only woke up later with the assembly. I slept on the chair.
The football was so tense. How could you sleep, you know?
No. It was tense, you know. Maybe I was also tired and I was a bit relaxed. I was watching through.
Yeah.
Now, all of a sudden, I slept. I woke up when the celebration.
And you didn't even see the goal going in and all those, you know.
It's only this morning that I was seeing the replay and things like that.
Yeah.
You see, that's why I think sport is income generating activity.
You know that South Africa is thinking actually hosting African Cup of Nations in 2028. You know now including Botswana and Namibia, you know, hosting this together.
Where are we going to accommodate those people now? Because some of them, they must practice at Mungurume.
Exactly.
Some of them must practice. For you, you are blessed because you can Ongwediva and all these other areas. So some of them must participate. No, and then when they know all those things are done, so in the camping, where the people are going to camp, it is us now to come up with this village tourism kind of an issue.
Yeah.
Because when they come here, and they have nowhere to sleep, they have no sports field to practice so that they can fly, this is how they do it.
Yeah, I mean, imagine in honest truth, imagine if this whole plan, the whole plan of this facility is actually put in place and really build them to the level standard that CAF or any FIFA, you know, required. Imagine where every constituency you have actually a stadium and region you have some really good stadium. You know, that would really bring a different, it's an opportunity already for a occasion like that. You know, and you know, plans are there, but if they are just on paper, they are worth nothing. You know.
So yeah. I think that's what I'm saying. That's what I think that maybe this time around, we just need to bring ourselves to account. Now that we have those declarations made. And there are many that have been made, and they are made, and people are just really dangling and, you know, So I don't know whether it's the deliberate effort. It's just that, yes, we need more consciousness to be created.
Yeah.
Or I think it's us, because now we know that, yes, the governors are giving that. And if the sports are not coming in, because the sports will now mean that there are also trade fairs there, within there.
Yeah, exactly.
So my brother, who is a coach, is here now, and they need to make sure that they work together with all those communities. The churches are there. Everybody is there. We are not going to say yes when you are bringing this.
Quickly, there is an advert coming up quickly.
Imba ya rire ombwa nai etetwa weza kwa ombu nikiro ombe ombi hukusha onjiviro yoye irire ombupu ohakane na wina ikare no masa kumurungu wa indu weriro ngere kusha umune ondenguo kuura kwa imba una ovyu media peke kwa rondola mirongo vitatu na hambu umwe mumwezi too twika ovinki no kukara norupa ondando ya peke yukianja oshimariva owa peresente dano kumyeze vitatu moshimariva owa peresente umurongo kumyeze hambu umwe moshimariva owa peresente umirongo ivari na dano Kumyeze umurongo na ivari moshimariva litoro rera ondengu jima yu ungura na wakove na wina onyano kife ashiesho imba ya kupe oshimariva shishihina omaruhiro imba o maoronga neno uye uha kainina itako na wina rishangita jinon
All right, I'm gonna just wrap up now.
So what I was saying is, I'm just concluding saying that yes, if that is the directive, so it means that every one of us can grab those opportunities that you are talking about. You were talking about from the beginning when you just interacted.
Yeah.
So if there are those opportunities in terms of tourism, in terms of any other activities, so why can't we then say, fine? You know, because before we point fingers there, we say, yes, guys, what is it that you want here? And those fields, you know, when you are constructing a field, you are also looking at the village where there are spaces for those little ones, you understand?
Yeah.
Not that when you construct the whole road there, like the side of Ruakana, this space was left out. And the people are coming, of course, we cannot benefit from that. So all these activities, economic activities that are emerging through there, please let's integrate them and say, yes, this is the directive. All these issues should be included in this. Thank you very much, Mike, for the opportunity. I will try to, since you said it will come out.
Time.
Thank you very much. God bless.
All right. Our time is about 32 minutes. 32 minutes past the hour of 9, and I hope that the app should be sorted out. And in Windhoek, I believe your frequency is on. You can be able to do that. You can be able to hear. Yeah. So, all right. And other part that are not be able to. You know, to hear from the frequency, make sure that you upload, you download the Eagle FM app, and for you to remain connected and also get updated with the news and everything that is going on there. All right. So good morning and welcome. So let's get into our second story, you know, which is also very, very important. We touched on with Uncle Bona. I get into it because there's something he said me refer to go to that. So welcome. This is Unpacking the Day, and this is a show where we cut through the noise and get to the heart of what really happening in our country or beyond the borders as well. So now, in this segment, we're going to talk about the major power play from the highest office, you know? Now, the president has decided, if you actually have read through the newspaper, the president had decided to change the captain of the team right in the middle of the game, okay? While we're still in the middle. It's like a coach. You know, the president, she decided, okay, we're going to change the captain. You are not leading the team very well.
So get out. And the game is building sport. The game now we talk about is actually building sports stadium for our nation. You remember that it was something everybody really applauded about. You're okay, there will be new, you know, in every constituency. So in every constituency, there will be a stadium and that way, you know. So actually, what is the story? It's in a very simple terms, President Andy Ndaitwa is fed up, actually. So she is fed up, and she looked at the scoreboard and see that despite over 1.3 billion being set aside for sport, for sport, youth, and national services, almost nothing is getting built. Almost not anywhere, in any region, all the region, almost nothing is getting built. Money is there. The stadium were promised are still just dreams on paper. They just dream on paper. So, what does she do? What did she do? On December 30th, the 25th, the 2025, last year, she drops a directive. She drops a directive. She essentially say, hey guys, enough is enough, man. It's enough. She's now taking control. She's taking control away from the National Ministry, you know, of the Education, Innovation, Youth and Sport and Culture. Oh, this ministry is too long, man. And handing over the power to, and the money, not just the power, and, excuse me, and the money as well, directly to the 14 regional governors. Okay? So they directly, you know, it's not only the power, but the money as well. Give it directly to the 14 regional governors. So, and what is the goal now? Why this change? It's to fast track the construction of sport facilities. Because the ministry seem to be sleeping. They are still actually in their dreamland. So now we're talking about basic sport field in all 120 in all 121 constituencies. Basic sport field. Now this is in all 121 constituency. Now we are talking about CAF approved category number 2. Excuse me. We're talking about CAF approved category number 2 stadiums, around 10,000 seats in each of the 14 regions. So in each of the 14 regions. So, and we're also talking about bigger category 3 stadiums, about 30,000 seats in key hubs like in key towns like Windhoek, Wavis, Oshakati, Rundu and Kidmanswap. Okay, that's about 30,000 seats. So that's what we're talking about. Now, the money, the power, the responsibility, it's all being shifted now to the regions. It's shifted to the regions, and she's given them a very tight deadline. And this is another something, man. A very tight deadline. She wants to see real, tangible progress by the 21st of March this year. Well, I don't believe that she wants to see a stadium standing already by 21st of March, that we are going to celebrate independence in one of the new stadiums. No, I don't think so. You know, but she wants to see, probably she wants to see some tangible progress happening on the ground. So probably because at the moment, absolutely zero. But the money is there. Absolutely nil. To make it happen, she even ordered the Ministry of Finance to give these governors, you know, special exemption. Said, okay, let's cut out the, you know, cutting through the usual bureaucratic bottleneck, which normally slow everything down. So let's cut out that out, and the national ministry, well, they are not completely left out. The national ministry are not completely left out. The national ministry is not completely left out, out completely. They are now supposed to provide technical support, but the governors are now the ones calling the shots, okay? They are now the one who are calling the shots. They are the boss, all right? Now, when you look at all that, okay? When you look at all that happens, it sounds like a decisive leadership, right? Now, the president sees a problem and she acts, isn't it? You know, but let's unpack this a bit deeper, okay? It's so, because this is about much, much, much more than just just Portfield. So now, first, let's be clear about what this move means, all right? The way I'm looking at it, this is a massive vote of no confidence in the national ministry. Yeah? How do you interpret that? How do you definitely interpret that? It's a massive vote of no confidence in the national ministry. The president is essentially saying you had your chance and you failed. That's the statement. You had your chance and you failed. The money is there, the plans are there, but you can't get the job done. You can't get the job done. So she bypassed the usual bureaucracy, the red tape, and the slowing process that have kept this project stalled for years. So you have your chance and you're done. It's a really, really a massive vote of no confidence. Vote of no confidence in the national ministry. That's exactly what it shows. It is something that you don't just push it that away. Huh? You don't just push it that away. Yeah. Even from the minister, from the president's point of view, you cannot just, okay, you couldn't do that. You haven't done this, the project. You haven't done the work that you're supposed to do. Now we give it away and then we leave it at that. No. Someone has failed. What do you do with that? We have that tendency of just, okay, let's shift the problems to someone else. And what happened? Huh? What happened to the person who was actually given that task? Yeah? So we even know that she even told the Ministry of Finance to give the governor a special exemption to cut through even more administrative hurdles. This is a president trying to clear a path with bulldozer, not a shovel. Not a shovel, with a bulldozer. Completely with a bulldozer. So, and this is where I think sometime, you know, this is where, for many, many of you are listening actually, this is where it's sometimes getting annoying, maybe getting annoying for us, Namibian people. How many times have we heard this story? A big budget is announced with much fanfare, you know, promises are made, and then silence. Silence. The project stalls. The project comes to just a halt. You don't hear anything. The funds sit unused. And then at the end of the financial year, the money gets sent back to the state treasury. While we are still actually left with a dust field. You know, our fields are still dusty. Nothing has done. And the broken dreams that were sold to us. That happened quite often. So the directive is a direct response to that frustration. I think the president is also frustrated. The president wants to make sure the 200 million for regional stadiums the 200 million for basic sport facilities in every single constituencies, the 50 million for sport leagues are actually spent, not returned, not diverted. Spent. S-P-E-N-T. Spent. Now, here's the first big question I have, all right? So we need to, this is the question that we need to ask ourselves. So is this, now, what now the president is doing, is this a brilliant solution or are we just creating a different kind of problem? Now, looking at that, now, this kind of directive and, you know, now shifting the responsibility now to the governor, is that, would you say that is a brilliant solution? There could be good reason to say yes, but there could be also reason to say that we can look and say, this could be very dangerous. Or are we just creating a different kind of problem? Are we creating another problem? Now, think about it. Now, this is how I'm thinking about it. So we are moving the responsibility from one central point in Windhoek. Of course, we're all saying we want decentralization. But decentralization goes hand in hand with capacity building. Okay? So I want you to understand. I want you to understand where I'm coming from. So now, the responsibility from one central point in Windhoek to a 14 different region offices. Now, the question is, are our governors in their councils, you know, equipped to handle multi-million dollar construction? Are they really equipped to handle the multi-million dollar construction projects? Do they have the technical expertise, the project management, I mean the project managers, the engineers? Or are we just setting them up to fail? Is this capacity in the region? Yeah? Is that in the region? And what about the accountability? That's another thing. Now, when you're looking at that, it is one thing to watch one ministry, okay? It's another thing really entirely to keep an eye on 14 different governors, each with their own teams and their own ways of doing of doing things. That's massive. So that's absolutely massive. Are we opening up the door for the very same issues of poor planning and corruption, but now on a regional scale where it might be even harder to spot? Are we opening up that possibility, that same issue of poor planning and corruption? Well, I'm just broadening your mind to think, right? That's what I'm paid to do. Yeah. So, now, and looking at the comments in the paper, looking at the comment in the paper from the ministry and the governors, the picture was mixed. Okay, you get this mixed reactions. The deputy minister's office refused to talk, apparently, according to the article. The president and finance ministry went silent. So what does all that mean? But some governor did speak up. You know, we have the governor in Karas say they have already held meetings and decided where to build. But that's a progress, at least. The governor in Kavango East is also ready to go. They sound like they are on a starting block, you know, waiting just for the gun. Eh? Yeah. A very good morning. Welcome to Unpacking the Day.
Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, man. How are you?
Yeah, good. Yeah. job creation.
Job creation. 121, you know, facilities, you know, in each constituency. Yeah.
Yeah, but it sounds unplanned. Serious.
Even if you're just taking 14 stadiums, you know.
Yeah, and I think the sport activity, they are not even 20 or even if you are listening to those sport commenters who are participating in the national radios.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are no... We have to look at where the activity. They were supposed to do that.
Exactly. So, because you might put actually a facility in certain constituents and it becomes a ghost.
And you look at the 5,000 that you are talking about. Are they really working with the statistics? That's using math, man. Ah, man. Serious people are not planning.
And believe me, that money, there will be money that will be wasted.
Yeah, it will be gone for the drone, this one. Yeah. Ah, serious. Ah, President, he let us down, man.
Yeah,
it's unplanned thing. Even if you giving your money to that, such as a ministry, you lose your money completely. So they were supposed to look at where there is a sport activity, and they were also supposed to communicate with schools what is really sporty.
Yeah.
Because sports is coming from the ground. A child have to groom from school to community. That is how you breeding up sport. Look at the other countries like Kenya where they are doing for the marathon guys, and you look at Jamaica. You look at Brazil. People are coming from school to those community sport field.
Yeah.
So I don't know what are they trying to do here.
But what about actually improving it now to a international level the facility that you have? It won't cost that much.
It won't cost that much. The number that is making me not to even to address it, listen to it, 5,000. Some of those communities, they don't have even 2,000 people.
Yeah.
And we here, you are telling us, and we have a data-wise. Those are coming from the Electoral Commission. Those are coming from what?
No,
I mean. Mike, I don't want, maybe there is somebody who is going to participate. Let me listen more.
Thanks, Vin. Thanks for coming through. All right. This, I think we don't engage enough, you know. And believe me, my dear people, you know, and it's not only here, not only Eagle FM, but if we really question things enough as citizens, you know, sometimes we are too complacent. I said that sometimes we are too complacent. It's not just about, sometimes it's not looking at what did Uncle Bono mentioned somewhere mentioned about, you know, students that still have no textbook, they are the overcrowded and schooling overcrowding. So these are money. You may, of course, facilities are very important. I would even look at, okay, look at the schools that have facilities. If you actually, schools that have facility already, if you improve those, definitely, and events can normally take place. You don't need to construct completely a new one. Events can take place in those activities. There are schools, you know, for example, we have Moshipandege have a stadium, but it's completely, you know, completely horrible, you know. I'm looking at one of the schools. What is the other schools also? So there are other schools that have facilities that just, if you actually just improve that, then everybody in around the Ongwediva can actually use that facility. Rather than now looking at, okay, maybe in some towns, you can decide that, okay, in this town we need to have a facility of this caliber, okay? So, yeah. But in other places, you know, there are already some infrastructures that are not up to level. As I said, well, the governors were, they were also, they also speak out, but then
you hear that the governor, say for example of Zambezi, apparently wasn't even aware of the president's directive. You know, wasn't even aware of that directive. So, and that's a worrying sign. You are asked to do something and you have no idea. How can you implement the plan if you don't even know the plan exists? Yeah. So now, and the wonderful George Njupa raised another excellent point, actually. You know, he's worried about building in a remote like Tsunkwe. Yeah. So he said the distance makes it more expensive. And he insisted that quality must not be sacrificed for speed, which is a really good point. And he said these facilities must be built to last for generations. That's what you want. Not only to last for generations, but to be constantly being used. So, and well, that brings me to my next big question for you all, really. With this tight deadline of March 21st, are we risking a rush job? Or what does that real deadline mean? I'm trying to interpret from the article. I can't make it what really that deadline mean. Does it mean, you know, have stadium ready, which is highly impossible. We're already in January. You can't be able to finish building a stadium. Well, maybe other simple... other level of sport areas, yeah. So, ground, maybe, yeah. Yeah, that could be done. Yeah, that could be done. So, yeah. So, now what I'm asking is, are we going to see stadiums, you know, and sport facility popping up quickly? But build with, we could do that, but we could then, those could be built with cheap materials and poor workmanship and just governor, just so... so that governance can meet the president's deadline? That's possible. And will they take the time to do it right? Those are other questions. Risk the president, but then you risk the president's, you know, wrath or anger as well. Eh? Olipokati ko shilare ko no. No shige. Non konda ige. You know, that's something that we need to think about. This directive is a test. This is also before I still have some minutes. Yeah, before Nalubanda comes through. So, this is a directive. I think this directive is a test. Test in many ways. It's a test for our governors. All right? It's a test for our governor. Can they deliver? Okay? So, it is also a test for the president's new style of leadership. So this kind of style of leader, is this how she will handle others, you know, other projects that are stalled, you know, around the country, like hospitals or roads? It's another test, you know. So, and most importantly, it's a test for our democracy. So we, the people, need to be the referee here, okay? We need to be the referee here. We need to watch closely. We need to ask really questions. Like now, the previous scholar who comes, we need to ask questions. So we still have about 2 minutes. I can still give you something. So, yeah, if you want to say something before. But the question is, that you can even discuss among yourself, wherever you find yourself, what do you think of the president's decision to hand over stadium project to the governors? What do you think about that? So do you trust the regional governor to manage project like this properly and transparently? Yeah? Think about it. Yeah? And what should happen if governor misses the March 21, you know, 21st deadline? So, and is this the shake-up we need? is this the shake-up we need to get things done? Maybe that's the shake-up that we need to get things done. Is it a risky gamble, though? Is that a risk gamble, though, with our money? Because if that money is gone into something that will be standing there and it's not being used, it's a waste. So that's going to be a waste. Okay? That will be a waste. All right? So, yeah, that's what we have for you this morning. And those are some aspects that you can discuss. Wherever you find yourself, it's not just that you come through, but wherever now you're listening, and you can talk to your colleagues in offices or anyone about that. So, well, let's do this tomorrow again. Our time is about it's about 10 o'clock. So I will give my I will hand over to Tate Naluvanda, who will be coming through in a short while. So from me, Mike Oshaveli, I wish you a very good day, and let's do this again tomorrow at the same time and the same place. So from me, it's a goodbye for now.